Uncle Skeeter inviting you back next week as we help to spread the cheese.
This is Bird Note. Puffins are boldly colorful icons of northern islands and sea cliffs, where they nest in dense colonies during the summer. In the spring, puffins grow thin, blazingly colorful layers over the base of their huge beaks. Some species' beaks turn vivid yellow, others a bright red or orange, and they make all kinds of noise. In winter, however, puffins lead very different lives. For one thing, winter puffins are not nearly as fancy. Once their chicks fledge in late summer, adult puffins shed the ornaments that wowed their mates in spring. Their beaks turn a dull orange, and their bright white summer faces turn a sooty color. Tufted puffins, named for their long blonde head tufts, go tuft-less in winter. Horned puffins lose the fleshy horns above their eyes. And puffins in winter go silent as well. The birds depart their nesting cliffs by September and head for the open ocean. Three species winter in the North Pacific and one in the North Atlantic. Puffins remain largely solitary for the 7 months of the year they spend at sea. But as winter gives way to spring, the clowns of the cliffs return, once again outfitted in their finest colors. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
We're from the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. You would think that loud, chaotic music would make someone living with ADHD more scattered and unable to focus. In fact, it's the exact opposite. The noise found within punk, hardcore, and metal can, shall we say, soothe the savage beast. But seriously, Nate Worrell of UK hardcore band Going Off would be the first to tell you that loud music is one of the best ways to calm the swirling thoughts in his head. Nate has struggled with ADHD for decades and recently got diagnosed. He has started on medication, which he says has been beneficial. The overstimulation and what he calls bees in his head aren't going away, but with medical treatment and acceptance, Nate has been able to manage his ADHD. And he's still listening to lots of punk, hardcore, and metal. Always the punk, hardcore, and metal.
Nate Worrell. I currently play guitar in Going Off, a UK hardcore band. I've been playing music for many, many years. I first picked a guitar up when I was 9. I started with piano a few years before that, but sucked that off when I discovered punk and metal. So, now I'm in going off. Have been since the inception, just coming up to 6 years ago. Mental health-wise, I've always really kind of struggled since a very early age. Over the years, I've always kind of felt not very normal. Didn't really fit in. And over-emotional, sort of like I've felt things really, really deeply. Struggled with depression from probably about high school and onwards. Loads of counselling and antidepressants and other medication that just didn't seem to really work. Struggled in school, just was carting around, letting the emotions get the best of me, just quite an angry, irate sort of teenager. Just about scraped through school. Always kind of obsessed with music, though. My sister got me into, like, bands like Fields and the Nephilim and Ministry when I was very, very young. I've still got, like, a cassette tape that she made for me with, I think it was Dawnraiser, Fields and the Nephilim, and on the other side was Mine is a Terrible Thing to Taste by Ministry. Like, we always had, like, such a strong bond. And from there, I've just become absolutely obsessed with playing music, listening to music, go to shows and stuff. I got into, like, college. That's when I started to kind of get the impression that there was something not really right at all. So I had, like, a tight group of friends. They all, like, went to college, did really well. I went to a college, and then I just fell into, like, the party lifestyle. Wasn't what I wanted to do. Ended up getting kicked out of that college, went to another college doing whole new courses like music and stuff. Still kept up the party and go to like metal clubs and all that sort of stuff. Ended up just doing bar work and stuff at a club that I'm still at now. So it's a club called Satan's Hollow, but I DJ there now, but I was on the bar then.
I've talked to a lot of people about how, you know, they're really struggling at an early age and then they found the punk rock scene and, you know, like in your case, you know, you're playing piano and you're like, forget that. I'm going to go do this noisier thing over here. How were you attracted to that? Was there a certain feel that you got from it that made you want to go in that direction?
Stuff that I was listening to just like kind of felt relatable. Like when I was playing piano and like the transition to getting guitar, I was into a lot of Britpop because being from Manchester in the 90s, like Oasis and Pulp and all stuff like that were like kicking off. So I was into that sort of stuff. And then it's just on like kind of compilation CDs and just like heavier like American bands. Like I remember hearing Green Day on some like Enemy cassette thing that came with it. And it was Brat from the Insomniac album.
Mom and Dad don't look so hot. They say, so get it up on the hill.
I was like, this is really cool. It was just like fast and energetic and it kind of matched some of the feelings inside my head some of the time. So I went down that sort of avenue and then me and my sister, she kind of saw that I was going through that thing. So I used to go stay with her because she lived in another city in Leeds. I remember being like 11 or 12 and I went to stay with her. They had like an upstairs pool room. It was basically just full of CDs and records. And she was like, help yourself. So I was just there. And then like, that's when I started listening to like new metal because late 90s and stuff like that. And like got really heavily into like Green Day, like Rage Against the Machine and bands like Sisters of Mercy and like Therapy and just everything just drew me to it. And I just became like obsessed, hyper-focused on it. And as soon as I came back from staying with her that summer, I just like, that was it. I was like buying CDs like 2-3 times a week. My dad would make me like pack lunch to take with me. And I'd just sell it to my friends and just like steal from the canteen just so I had money to buy more CDs. I'd be reading like Kerrang! Magazine that my sister saved for me every time I saw her. And I'd just like obsessed with like reading about bands. I'd be like, right, I'll get that. And soon my CD collection was and shirt collection was like increasing, and just the whole like imagery and the alternativeness just really, really appealed to me. And it just felt like something that resonated.
I think that when I was young, I just pound music into your ears as fast and as loud and as chaotic as you can. And for me, not knowing, of course, at that point that I was dealing with ADHD, it was like, okay, well, this is actually calming my mind. You know, like most people listen to classical and be like, oh, mm-hmm. so calm. But I needed something to really block out the spinning and just really be able to absorb.
Yeah, I absolutely relate to that completely. My mum tried to get me on the whole classical thing and forced me, like, learn to play piano. She even, like, tried to get me into Apocalyptica, you know, the dudes yeah. with the cellos that did the Metallica covers. No, it's not ticking the boxes at all. I need to listen to something loud. I need to listen to something fast and something that I can relate to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just went from there.
I think also things like studying. I did a master's program, wrote a book. Well, I wrote the whole book listening to Converge and listening to Napalm Death. And
nice.
Without those kinds of noisy, swirling chaos, it would have been hard for me to settle my mind. Because if I'm just like trying to write here with nothing going on, like the seagulls or whatever, I'm just stuck. I need to have that shift. A switch goes off.
I'm exactly the same. Like even like in my adult life, working in jobs, I've always had to try and get away with listening to headphones, because if I don't have that constant noise in my ears, then I am so distracted. I remember I was in like an IT job for a supermarket over here, and it was pretty high paced, and I had an agreement with my manager that I could listen to my headphones in one ear just to kind of keep me grounded. I remember I went away to America for a few weeks, and I came back and something had happened in the office, like someone had basically like thwarted the privileges and came back, and it was just like, right, no more headphones in the office. And that was horrible. I could not cope. But then luckily, like, the pandemic happened and I had to work from home. So then that was it. And then they laid me off. So I think it was during lockdown when, I just was really starting to properly struggle with just day-to-day stuff. Like, I've got by, but I've had to mask, and it's just so exhausting. And then not having to go to an office and deal with people, then I didn't have to mask. So then I was noticing more and more stuff that I just wasn't either getting right or struggling with. So I went on the waiting list for ADHD referral maybe 5 years ago. And then it just kept going on and on. So recently got my diagnosis. Took about 4 months to get my medication. But yeah, now I've been medicated for about 3-4 months now. Finally got the dose that I think I need, and it's helping me a fair bit now to actually knuckle down and get some stuff done.
I talked to this one person that was saying that when she was given the ADHD meds, when she was quite young, actually, she went into a store with her parents, and it was the first time she didn't break something in the store, didn't accidentally knock something over, and that clarity of mind.
One thing that I've always struggled with, which led me to think that I was ADHD, even in school, like some of the teachers were like, we think you might have ADHD. And I like, told my parents, and my mum was like, no, you're too smart, it's fine. So I just coped for 20 years. But yeah, one thing that I struggle with is the noise in my head. I can only describe it as there's like thousands of bees in there. I can just like hear, say if there's too many noises or conversations going on at one time, that absolutely like drives me insane, and I just get really overstimulated and quite irritable, and it's not a fun feeling. But since taking the medication, besides like getting used to the medication, like kind of the peaks and troughs of like moods and stuff like that, it's stopping that as much, which leads me to being less like kind of anxious.
How does that bees feeling, that scrambled mind feeling, translate to being at shows and being around all the people at shows, and you know, you have to talk to everybody, and then also playing, there's lots going on upstage as well.
Yeah, I'm thankful for my earplugs. I wear those pretty much constantly, so it numbs the sound a little bit. Like being on stage playing, I can separate myself from everything, so it's just like me giving it my all for however long we play for, like 30, 40 minutes. And yeah, just block out absolutely everything. But then when watching shows, I go to a lot of shows on my own. Or I take my daughter with me, who is also like neurodiverse. So we just enjoy the show and just it takes our mind off things, really.
You talked about depression when you were young, and also that some people have mentioned that maybe you were dealing with something with attention and the hyperactivity and all those things that comes with ADHD. When you're at that point, it sounds like you're just sort of trying things out with the depression, but maybe not addressing the other side.
Yeah, that was exactly how I felt. I think when I was in college was when I was first doing like antidepressants. Didn't really feel anything. So I, like, against probably all doctor's advice, I just stopped taking them, forgot about it. Within my family, a lot of my family do experience like really big emotions, but then we're also told to just like kind of box them up and just forget about them. So I just was doing that. I just didn't feel safe to talk about how I was feeling. So I just like struggled on. Became a dad when I was like just 22. And then not long after that, maybe like a year or so, like I lost my sister to suicide. And that absolutely broke me because out of my entire family, like me and her were like absolutely tight as. Like she used to take me to my first shows, like Reading Festival loads. And she was the only person in my family I could like tell my worries to and everything. She always had sound advice. When I lost her, I was obviously devastated. And that's probably when the depression really, really hit. There was like the funeral and all that sort of stuff, and like hearing some of her favorite songs being played for like while she's being taken out and stuff. And then I was absolutely distraught, and I remember being told to pull myself together, and that kind of made me feel like, yeah, you're kind of too much, etc. So I kept holding it together. The same year, not long after, was when me and my daughter's mum split up as well, lost my job, and kept it going from there, just not dealing with the grief. And then like 3-4 years down the line, I kind of had a bit of a mental breakdown, and it wasn't nice. I was basically getting loads of antidepressants and stuff. Nothing was working. And instead of like the doctors just trying to help me address the issue, it was just giving me more and more medication. So I was on two different types of medication at one point. I couldn't work for 3 months because I couldn't sleep at night. So I had to take another one, which would knock me out, wake up not feeling myself and like a zombie. That carried on for like 3 months and it was horrible. So after that, I was just like taking all these pills and it's not even doing anything. So then I started to do like talking therapy, and even that didn't work. So I just kind of went without for years until this like ADHD stuff.
You think about an elastic band, right? All that pressure of pulling the elastic band and all this stuff's going on, and maybe tragedy happens and you're able to get through it and push through it, but then eventually that elastic band just breaks. And that could be 3-4 years later when things have built up to the point of no return.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a fun position to be in, but then yeah, there's always light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
How old was your sister when she died?
She was 39, so same age as I am now. I would have been 20, this is 15 years ago, so about 24.
A lot of people talk about that older person in their lives that turned them on to punk rock or metal. You know, that person in grade 12 and you're in grade 8 or whatever, or some uncle or whoever. But to have your sister be that person is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was so cool. It's just, she was such an influence on me. It was because of her that I discovered bands like Fugazi. Pixies and stuff, who have always been like a favorite of mine, like Lemonheads, Ministry and stuff like that. So yeah, she's responsible for a lot. Bit of a fun story. So one of my favorite bands ever is Alkaline Trio, and to this day now I think I've seen them like 20 times.
Wow.
So back in 2003, my mate's older brother saw the Ataris and got on stage with them for like one song. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and meet Matt Skiba. I'm going to ask him if I can play. And I did. I was like, yeah, can I play like one song with you? And he was like, how many do you know? And I was like, yeah, I know quite a bit, to be fair. And he's like, well, our guitar tech who does the backup tracking guitars is in hospital. Can you fill in? I was like, 17. Yeah. So I ended up going backstage and like learning the songs with them all, like jamming out Longview with Dan and stuff. And it was so surreal. They wanted me to go on tour with them for the rest of the tour. And my mum was like, no, absolutely not. But then she rang my sister and my sister was like, you do know that he will hate you for the rest of your life if you don't let him go. Pretty much soon enough, like my mum showed up with this massive like suitcase full of clothes and she like met Matt Skiba and she's like, will you look after him? But it turned out that there was no space on the bus, so I would have had to like get the train everywhere and I couldn't afford it because I didn't really have much of a job and stuff at that time. But yeah, she's always been so supportive and yeah. I know she'd be absolutely proud of me now. So
one of the things for me has been acceptance of these things. When I was diagnosed with bipolar in 2018, I had never really thought about it. I was in my mid-40s when I was diagnosed and didn't really know what it was. And then, you know, ADHD, kind of similar thing. It gets thrown out there here and there, but I didn't really think about it in a real sense. But trying to be kind to myself and trying to be self-accepting and not being self-defeatist, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things that's helped me over the last few years.
Absolutely. I can't agree on that enough. I've always been very self-deprecating and very, very hard on myself. And then once I did the initial ADHD referral and spoke to my GP and they were just like, yeah, you scored very high on that test, which is the first. We're going to put you forward for the ADHD referral. So like basically from that moment on, I was very accepting and just, I took things a little easier on myself. Like that's when the mask didn't need to be on anymore. And I could just be vocal with people. Like if I'm having a hard time, like having a shitty day or I'm struggling in certain things, I can just speak to people and myself. I can just not keep it all bottled up. I just let it out and just be kind to myself at the same time.
I do facilitating for support groups. And one of the things that comes up a lot is how do you talk to people about living with bipolar, with ADHD? Talking about mental health doesn't have to be clinical, or it could just be, look, I'm feeling really scrambled today, feeling those bees in my head or whatever. And I think as soon as you throw the names out there, they have their own idea of what those symptoms are or what it looks like. And because it is so different for each person, it's like, oh, no, like I don't know where I am right now. Like, I don't know where I've left this thing and this thing's over here. And why do I have this in my hands? And explaining the symptoms, I think, is a better way of making it clearer to people.
Yeah, I've definitely found that as well. There's like no need to quite keep things hidden. I'm just way more of an open book than I used to be. Not shoving emotions down and just pretending they don't exist. It gets you nowhere.
How does it feel to be able to change that much? And for me, it was reflecting back on my life look before that.
Yeah, it's definitely a good feeling. I've had it in the past, like when I was in All We Have, going back like 2008, 2009. So we started that band based in Manchester. And then I was the guitarist, moved to Bristol and the band relocated, but I was adamant I was going to stay there. We'd lost our vocalist, so I decided to jump on vocals and did a couple of shows. But then it didn't work out because, yeah, basically with my ADHD, I couldn't do any writing. And because of that, we ended up parting ways. But now, like, I know I have ADHD and I take medication. I can do the things. I remember in our band group chat a couple months ago when I just started medication, we're getting some new songs ready for a tour. I was like, yeah, so I practiced these songs and then everyone just, oh my God, he's medicated. Because usually I just get so stuck in the cycle, just like sitting down, listening to records, like watching TV and stuff like that, that I just forget that stuff exists and I need to do things. And it's been beneficial as well because I'm pretty much like the tour dad because I'm like the oldest in the band and I'm like organizing all the accommodations and booking the van, stuff like that. So being medicated is definitely helping me be a bit more proactive as well.
What would you tell people who are trying to understand ADHD?
Just be kind to yourself. It's not the end of the world if you don't do the dishes or put your clothes away like straight away. Get around to it when you can. do the things that make you happy, because as you probably know yourself, it's all about like finding that dopamine wherever you can. For me, it's like buying records, buying shirts, even though I've got thousands probably each. Just take it easy. Don't be too tough on yourself and speak to people. You will find people that understand what you're going through and can relate.
It's well on my brain. Change my first mask again. But it sits well on my skull. Change my name again. Nothing worth holding on to. Change my whole situation. Nothing left for a year. Do I change my life? Or do I choose to lose? Change my point of view. Nothing's happened. Change my pain of mind. Nothing clearer. The way to change your life. Are you close to most? You ain't gonna change your life.
That was my conversation with Nate Worrell of Going Off, goingoffhc.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
CJSF is 90.1 FM, broadcasting from the heights of Burnaby Mountain.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During a hot, dry spell, you might think to water your garden, but perhaps not to water your trees.
But heat and drought stress are a key threat to overall tree health.
Christy Rawlinson of the Morton Arboretum in Illinois says prolonged drought can damage or kill even old established trees. And young trees with shallow roots are the most vulnerable. As climate change causes more intense heat and droughts, the risks are growing. Yet trees are more important than ever because they provide shade and help cool the air. So Rawlinson says if your grass is turning brown, it may be time to give your trees a drink.
We want to simulate a nice, long drizzle. Something that is also highly effective, particularly for little small trees, are what people will call gator bags or watering bags. And so those are those kind of tarp or canvas bags that you put around the base of the tree. That just kind of slowly drips out the water.
And adding a ring of mulch around the tree without covering the base of the trunk helps lock in moisture so the soil does not dry out as quickly. So by giving your trees a little extra bit of care, you can help them survive and thrive for years to come. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.